Beyond the Tenth by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 8. "Well," said the old man, attempting to straighten out some of the kinks in his back and wishing that wheelchairs weren't so horribly uncomfortable, "here's another chapter finished. Are you going to read it and see what you think?" For some time there was silence, broken only by the sound of rustling papers. Then at last came the noise of a bundle of papers being thumped down on a table. "But," said Mrs. Old Man, "you said you were going to mention a cure for toothache. You know, a lot of people have asked about these things, so why not tell them how to get rid of a toothache?" The old man sighed and said, "If people have got things wrong with their teeth, the only cure is to have the wretched thing out. I never did believe in silly things like fillings." Mrs. Old Man sniggered to herself and replied, "No, but you don't have any teeth either, or at least none worth mentioning." The old man looked a bit glum as he felt a few remaining teeth with his tongue. "Still," he thought, "there are no fillings among them, and I would have had more if I hadn't had my jaw smashed so badly." Aloud, he said, "All right, let's tell them something about how to cure a toothache." Modern science, of course that should be modern medical science, has not been able to improve upon nature's remedy for a toothache. Modern medical science often prescribes an entirely artificial substance which has the most unfortunate vice of sensitizing a person against it. As it seems to me to be an invention of the devil, I will not mention its name, but there is one quite infallible natural cure for toothache. Go to your drugstore and obtain a small bottle of oil of cloves, and then when you get home, get a little ball of cotton wool and put a drop or two of oil of cloves on it. Gently rub the gum surrounding the offending tooth with the oil of cloves, and if the tooth has a cavity, put a small amount of cotton wool soaked in oil of cloves so that it rests in the cavity. Within seconds, your toothache will stop. You should obtain best grade of oil of cloves that you can, because the better the grade, the more unadulterated, and the quicker the relief. Old country people often kept a few cooking cloves in a jar, and at the first sign of toothache, they put a clove on the offending tooth and bit down so that the clove is crushed and the oil inside covers the tooth. This is one of the oldest and still one of the most modern cures for toothache. No matter that this is very efficient, you still need to go to your dentist to find out what really caused the toothache, because you can't keep on dunking a bad tooth in oil of cloves, can you? The best thing is to have the wretched thing out. Incidentally, I always wonder why dental treatment is such a brutal affair. I have never yet had any painless dental treatment, and it does seem to be an area which could do with a lot of research. If I had a lot of money, and so could get my auric machine going, dentists would be able to see much more clearly what is wrong with teeth and how to get them out painlessly. What I had visualized was a thing like an instant photograph camera, which would take a photograph of the aura of a person so that anyone could see the colors. It is the colors of the aura which are important, you know. The brightness of the colors and their particular striations. If one looks at an aura and one sees the color of a disease, then, given suitable apparatus, it would be quite possible to cure the disease before it really got a hold. One could cure it by applying the necessary contra colors, which would change the degraded color of the illness, and so, by sympathetic reaction, the person would be cured from the aura to the physical body. This is not a wild pipe dream. It's a thing which really works. It is a thing which doctors should investigate. Unfortunately, medical treatment is 100 years or so behind the times, and if doctors would only get down to business and investigate new ideas instead of saying, "That's impossible," then no doubt people would not suffer pain so much. For those who desire to experiment with the aura and who have some money, let them try buying one of those reasonably cheap television cameras and connect it to a television set. The camera should be set to receive and transmit much higher frequencies, that is, a higher part of the spectrum, than is usual for pictures. And if the adjustment is carried out correctly, the onlookers can see a fuzzy reproduction of a human body with various gray streaks and lines and swirls around the body. If people want to experiment with a camera and they have some knowledge of chemistry, it is possible to make sensitive material which can record a much higher frequency than that normally used in orthodox photographic work. This also works because I have taken pictures of the human aura, and I have destroyed such pictures because it gets utterly monotonous when some scientist says that such things can't be. Therefore, the pictures must be fake. A scientist, and that should be in quotes, will say this even when a picture has been produced in front of him. He still thinks there's a trick somewhere, and it does appear to me that the world is not yet ready for auric photography. It needs to have the scientific geniuses educated for a few more years. Sight and sound and touch are very interesting subjects, you know. They are all part of the same spectrum of vibration. Do you ever stop to think when touch becomes sight or sound? If you are touching a thing, you get a very crude vibration, which impresses that part of your body with which it came in contact, that here is a subject of some particular composition, that is, density. You can also see such a thing. But then, do you realize that you cannot see a sound wave, nor can you hear the thing which you see? If we go from our touch point of view upwards on the scale of the spectrum, we hear a sound. That sound may be a low note, that is, almost on the touch scale, or it may be a high note, which is almost into the sight scale. When your ears fail to respond to certain vibrations because they have gone too high, then your sight takes over. You may, for example, see a dull red, but just think about sight in your next meditation. When you see a thing, you do not touch that thing. It may be a glass bottle, it may be billions of miles away in space, but yet the thing which you see is touching you, or you'd not be able to perceive it. You can only see an article when that article is vibrating so much that it is continually throwing off particles of itself and generating vibrations which cross space and everything else to reach you. But these vibrations are so frail, so weak, that even a sheet of black paper can cut them out, while the coarse vibrations of sound can penetrate even a stone wall. One could say that this life and the astral life are represented in this manner. The coarse vibrations of sound would represent life on Earth, but the finer and higher vibrations of sight would represent the astral. There are many senses available to us in the astral which we do not even know about when in the physical. People write to me and they ask, how is it possible for a fourth dimensional person to, well, as an illustration, drop a stone into one's living room? I think the person who wrote had just read in an account in a newspaper about a haunted house wherein stones were thrown into locked rooms. The answer to that is that in the third dimensional world of the flesh, we're only able to perceive in the dimensions of the flesh, and if there was an opening somewhere else, the flesh body's eyes would not be able to perceive it. Let us assume that humans can only look down, or they are two-dimensional. So as they can only look down, they cannot see the ceiling above. But if a person outside the room can perceive that there is no ceiling there, then that person can easily toss a brick in to the person who cannot look up. That is rather a crude way of explaining it, but what really happens is that every room or everything on Earth has another opening, another aperture, which humans on Earth cannot perceive because they lack the necessary organ with which to perceive that dimension. Yet, a person who is in a fourth dimensional world can make use of that opening and pass things through it into what to the third dimensional inhabitant is a closed space. This type of joke is often played by lower entities who like to pose as poltergeists. We must not forget the lady who wrote in and asked me if I could explain in simple terms the nature of telepathy. She had read my other books, but apparently this subject of telepathy had her completely baffled. Let's see what we can do, shall we? Even scientists now agree that the brain generates electricity. There are medical procedures in which brain waves are charted. A special apparatus is placed on the head, and four squiggly lines indicate four different levels of thought. For some strange reason, these four squiggly lines are given Greek names, which doesn't concern us at all. But the brain generates electricity, and the electricity varies according to what one is thinking in much the same way as if one is speaking into a microphone. The words generate a current which continuously varies in intensity according to what is being said. In a tape recorder, for example, one speaks and one's speech impresses minute magnetic currents on a specially prepared tape. Afterwards, when the tape is played back, one obtains a reproduction of the original speech. The human brain generates an electric current which other brains can pick up, in much the same way as the tape on a tape recorder picks up the minute impulses from voice vibrations, which are transferred to electric impulses. When you think, you broadcast your thoughts. Most people are immune to the noise of the thoughts of other people, and fortunately so, because everyone is thinking something all the time, and unless people were immune to that continuous, non-stop, never-ending noise, one would go quite round the bend. By special training, or by a fluke of nature, one can tune in to thoughts because, as our brains generate electricity, so they are able to receive electrical impressions. It is a form of telepathy which keeps the body in touch with the overself. The telepathy in this instance being a very special ultra-high frequency current going from the brain of the flesh body by way of the silver cord and on to the overself. But to reply in the simplest possible terms to the question, how does telepathy work? It is necessary only to say that every brain acts as a radio transmitter and radio receiver. And if you knew how to switch on your receiver, you would be inundated with everybody else's thoughts. You can pick up the thoughts of those with whom you are compatible far more easily than you can pick up the thoughts of those with whom you are not compatible. And a good exercise is to guess what a person whom you know well is going to say next. If you guess for some time, you will soon discover that your successes are far outstripping the laws of chance. And when you begin to realize that, you are well on the way to telepathic communication with the person with whom you are compatible. Here again, it is a matter which needs practice and patience, and when you are telepathic, you will wish you were not, because life will be a constant babble, what with humans and animals all the time talking to each other. End of chapter 8. Chapter 9. Outside the window, the noise and the clamor were continuous. High-speed pneumatic hammers were drilling holes many feet into the old rock, a rock which used to be the site of many fine old houses. In years gone by, the wives of sea captains lived here, and kept their nightly vigil of the sea, waiting for their men to return home, home to the haven of the harbor, with the ever-burning light beckoning from the house windows. One fine old house, towering above the others, had stood proud for years, and in its declining days the ghost of the old lady who had watched, and watched in vain, for the return of her beloved husband, had become well known. Nightly she stood at the port side window, with her hands holding aside the drapes so that she could see more clearly. Night after night, in ghostly outline, she stood there, peering, peering, seeking the man who never came back to her, the man whose body lay beneath the surface of the ocean, 1,000 miles from home. Now the house was down, demolished. The whole street of houses was down, and the voracious drills and hammers were biting at the living rock, tearing it up in great chunks to make way for the progress of civilization. Here would be a great road, an artery of the community, a road spanning the city, spanning too the river, linking one side to the other by a new bridge. The clamor was continuous. Immense bulldozers shoved vast piles of rock and earth. Steam shovels gouged into the soil. Trucks rattled and roared at all hours of the day and night. There was the shouting of men and the barking of dogs, and peace had fled long ago. The old man bent over the letters from readers and set aside the last one. Mrs. Old Man looked up, perhaps with a sigh of relief, to see that the work was coming to an end. Then she rose to feed the little girl cats, who had come bustling in to say that it was their tea time, and could they have their food in a hurry, please, because they had thought a lot and were very hungry. So Mrs. Old Man went off with a cat on each side. The old man turned to Buttercup. Buttercup, who in Spanish was misnamed Amapola. Buttercup, said the old man, it doesn't matter that there has been a mail strike. We've done some good work in answering all these queries, haven't we? Buttercup looked pleased to think that the work was coming to an end for another day. You only started this 14 days ago, she said, and now the book is finished in record time. Yes, replied the old man, but you've typed 7,000 words a day, haven't you? And now we've come to an end. Buttercup smiled with pleasure at the thought. Well, in that case, I just will type the end, replied Buttercup. End of chapter 9. End of Beyond the 10th.